tell the doc. They didn't just go off and sleep with someone. First, they plotted through. This is where you have the care that was taken with this. You have the trouble with Fenmore. So you have a legitimate wedge in the relationship. From legitimate places, they're coming from, you know, Lauren and Michael. Michael comes from a place where he was raised by a bully. He would not tolerate that in his house. He was going to have Fenmore suffer the consequences to save him from becoming the person that Michael feared he might be.
He's one of our favorite podcast guests. On today's Daytime Confidential podcast, we welcome back the young and the restless, Christian LeBlanc. Christian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back. Thank you guys for inviting me, man.
And I know you've got a lot to talk about. You've got a ton of things going on. Most notably,
I'm in the know, my friend.
You are with a red
hot story.
Come
sit next to me.
You have, after we have been begging for this forever, but Michael and Lauren are in the middle of a red hot storyline on the show. What has it been like for you and Tracy Bregman, your leading lady, to play the dismantling of Michael and Lauren's family so beautifully on The Young and the Restless recently?
I got to give credit to the writing. I mean, it is. You're right. We've all been hoping for, you know, it's only fun to be the good couple for so many years. And then,
right.
But the top side and the great value of that for the show and for us as actors, for Tracy and I, is that you invest 5 years in something goes wrong, there it's a value. You know what I mean? The stakes are high. If, you know, the audience knows this, they're truly we're very tentative about touching anything about the relationship. You know, people evidently liked it so much, and I certainly enjoy. I mean, Tracy and I have such a sense of ease with each other, and we've had it from day one. It's always kind of amazed us. We sit there like a couple of freaks during breaks in the shooting. Like, oh, there was one time we were at a restaurant and looking at a concert, and Christoph St. John was near us, and we're on a 5-minute break, you know, their regular breaks they take, and we're still holding hands. And he goes, well, you're still holding hands. You're off camera. And we didn't even realize we're doing it. We're just sitting there talking. And that's the kind of ease it is. So you have this 5 years of investment the show's put in there, and then it's just been amazing writing. I got to tell you, I am not a person who goes upstairs. I find, you know, let the writers run free. That's whatever comes down the chute. I'm kind of always fascinated to see what they do, because I always think you should say yes.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, my character wouldn't do that going around, and you know, that's people's choice. You know. Everybody has a different technique.
There would be more of a challenge as an artist to just wait and see what's on the page and go for it. I mean,
it is.
Like,
I mean, also considering you have, you know, here, you know, whatever say you might have is very, very minimal as far as where your storyline goes. I mean, they're very, you know, welcoming with, you know, fine tuning, but, you know, the writing is the writing, and I respect that. That is God's work up there.
All right.
You're writing. You need 12 months a year, 5 days a week. You owe the public one show, and that's nothing to sneeze at. But also, it's one of those things where, you know, every now and then, you know, one came down. One time was like, Michael does an Inspector Clouseau imitation. Another one just came down as like one of his favorite movies is Austin Powers. So who knew?
Wow.
You know, so you're like, wow, serial killer loves Austin Powers. Or, you know, like back in the day, it was like, attempted rapist loves Clouseau.
Right,
they didn't know if I
did
a great Clouseau imitation. I happened to do a very good Clouseau imitation, and we did it. But that's the kind of stuff that kind of surprised you, and you can say no first, then you're going, why not? Because the nature of this business, this particular business, the daytime drama, it's serial work. You're living real time with everybody. And, you know, in real time, in all of our lives, we do almost anything given the right circumstances. So I've loved it. But cut to the quick, this has been, I have to give credit to these writers, because it's been adult conversations. And the great thing I've always liked about Michael and Lauren is that they met as adults. They met with past histories that were dark and complex, and they made each other better people. But they went in with their eyes open. There was no, you know, she bailed Kevin out of jail. That's when he fell in love with her. I mean, it weren't at no flower garden.
No, no, there, funny, there wasn't a...
Yeah, they come from dark places. Yeah, I mean, I remember being in college watching her torture Beth Maitland, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's
I wasn't even on daytime yet. I knew that what she did. So, I mean, it is just amazing. And to have, it's difficult. It's when Tracy and I run lines in the room and we're crying. It's like, well, we can't do this during the scene. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult stuff you say, and it's not... It's kind of Bell's best dream. It's real. It's the conversations and the fights are such that you root for Lauren, then you root for Michael, then you root for Max, then you root for Lauren, and then you root for Fenmore, and you go around like a real. It's all gray area. It's very human. I adore it. I have had a ball, but I'm terrified because I feel such a responsibility to live up to the writing and to the performances that are going on around me. It's like, wow.
Well, you got the four of you definitely are living up to the writing. Now, you mentioned something about how this basically there's more payoff to this, I think is what you were saying, because of the fact that Michael and Lauren have been such the happy tentpole couple for so long. So how did you, when you first found out that they were going to go this route, you know, causing these marital issues first with Fenmore and then going all the way to Lauren having an affair, how did you and Tracy react when you learned that they were going to do this with your family? I mean, because it obviously changes the dynamic a bit, because you went from happy-go-lucky scenes or saving her from the latest Sheila-esque villain to really having to dig in and say some nasty things to each other.
We loved it. We couldn't wait. I mean, again, playing happy is wonderful, and it's so easy to do. Mm-hmm. And they had invested enough time. They had tried. I mean, I know they had kind of put their toe in the water, the writers and the powers that be. Me with Avery, her with, you know, Doug, and they have done different things. But this was, I think of all of them, of all of the attempts, I like this because it really is what Bill Bell's vision was, and not to keep harping on that, but I think that's what sets us apart and makes us special in our own way, having these real life situations done by actors who have the chops, and by writers who are giving you what a couple says, and it's hard to say. And what's interesting is I have done some extreme stuff on the show. My wife kidnapped, all this other stuff. I have never taken work home with me, but at one point, Max, I was telling Max, who, you know, Max has gone to the High School of Performing Arts. Max has, you know, has credits up the wazoo. He's, you know, he's a seasoned actor at 21. I'm sitting there going, I don't understand why I'm so down sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you're playing stuff and you're hitting the gong over and over again in different ways. And it's exactly what you do when your relationship's in trouble. You know, those horrible conversations that go mm-hmm. on, and they're circular sometimes, and they're difficult, and you have to say things. I mean, you slept with someone else and you were in love, you know what I mean? And your mm-hmm. son, and you have to talk to the kids, and they did it so real that we would say lines, and I would sit there literally at rehearsal going, oh, gosh, that's hard yeah. to hear.
It definitely, I think, is a story Bill Bell would be proud of.
Yeah, I think, you know, because he gave me my job, you know, I was still around when Bill hired me. So, I mean, yeah, I like to think in those terms, and Lee is part of that team, and she's very much a presence on set, and I, you know, you like to dance with the person who brung you. So I'm hoping I please you.
Well, after Michael sent Fenmore to jail, Lauren became so disconnected from her husband that she had an affair with Carmine, played by Marco Dapper.
We just live tweeted this morning. Yes, you did.
What was your process for tapping into that level of betrayal for your character?
That's a hard one. I mean, we all. I mean, I've lived long enough that you have had what people call betrayal, what I called it at the time. I've never had that particular one where you know, what a gut punch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a real thing. I mean, we've all been there, but this was, it's hard. It's hard to have those conversations. I mean, And it was a really hard thing. It's a hard thing to write because they were kind of going, in my impression of things, for something where Lauren is taken away by the physical aspect, and they connected all the dots. They didn't just go off and sleep with someone. First, they plotted through, and this is where you have the care that was taken with this. You have the trouble with Fenmore, so you have a legitimate wedge in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
From legitimate places, they're coming. You know, Lauren and Michael. Michael comes from a place where he was raised by a bully. He would not tolerate that in his house. He was going to have Fenmore suffer the consequences to save him from becoming the person that Michael feared he might be. But with Michael in the dark side of that was Michael was really projecting his own fears onto his son. Was he really seeing his son for who he is? And Lauren was just being this mother bear. You're not my son and not in prison. And why are you on the other side of the fence on this? You know, she has Scotty. She's fought for her children up and down the block with Sheila and stuff. She's honed that like any mother would. But why are you on the other side? And she didn't. That's where they parted ways. And it's a legitimate break. Why weren't you there for me and the son? Was she loving Fenmore too much? Was she not seeing the problem? So, I mean, they made the situation where both people had a stake in it and that both people were at fault and both people were right at different times. And you had Max playing the hell out of the son, you know, so giving them trouble. I mean, so out of that comes this need for someone to pay attention to her. I mean, again, Lauren didn't just go off and have an affair. Michael just didn't want to throw Fenmore in jail. So they really had to take the audience step by step. And when they did it with this care and with this thoroughness, I think the audience buys in and appreciates it. Makes sense. I think to insult the audience and give them a happening where you haven't prepped them, especially something this big, you've insulted someone's intelligence, and that's the genius of this writing. You didn't go A to B to X.
Mm-hmm.
A to B to C to D in ways that any human being, any married couple, anybody would understand in very human terms.
It seems from a marriage, you know, it's and it's great. What I love about it is, and I'm a card carrying fan of a lot of over the top storylines with soaps, but not usually with The Young and the Restless. The Young and the Restless I always considered the fine wine of daytime. So when it did kind of veer off into the, you know, doppelgangers and things like that, I didn't really like it because I came to expect that from, you know, Days or General Hospital, but I didn't want that on my Y&R. And so I love that you guys are doing this well-received storyline that is so just rooted in scenes from a marriage. I mean, just the,
thank
you know.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think that too. And you're right. Every show has its own character and you come to expect something. And that, I think you're right. That's what people come to Y&R for, you know, personal relationships on a multi-generational platform.
Right.
We all want new now, yep. Next. We all want sexy and young. But sexy and young arguing with their grandmother is really interesting.
You know, exactly.
That's what Jeannie to the very end was pulling major storyline.
Yes, she
that's
was.
She was gold for that reason. Not a lot of shows had their 80-year-old pulling storyline.
Oh, no. Or they're even their 50-year-old.
Exactly.
On some of these shows.
Exactly. You're exactly
you
right.
Faster.
You know, if you want to be over 40, go to daytime, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. That's true.
Considering Lauren cheated on Michael, do you think he should be allowed a free pass to have an affair of his own? And if so, with whom?
Wouldn't that be interesting, huh? Yeah, I kind of think that because you want to just keep going. You want to keep making trouble. That's a difficult one. That's a difficult one. There's all sorts of scenarios. I mean, I would love, I mean, but do you want to go there and right away? Like I said, you have to earn that. And it would be interesting, but his response so far has been so tortured. And they teased it a little with Avery.
Mm-hmm.
And they initially had problems with Lauren having the gun and hiding it from him, and he was so distraught. But, you know, there are all sorts of wonderful permutations of that. I mean, I would love if there's an older, younger woman and there's an age difference, or if there's, you know, something done in the heat of pain. There's all sorts of things. I'll leave that to the writer, but that's always a card to turn. What I love right now is that this conflict with Carmine really pushes Michael's dark side, which we haven't seen in a long time. And I think that is is something to explore right now because it organically comes from this situation. So you
now,
have this man pressing, you know, torturing the family.
And they've been very, you know, both the writing and your portrayal has been kind of gingerly approaching Michael's darkness, because it could have been an easy, you know, route to go for, you know, for us to see Michael, you know, morph back into the guy who was terrorizing Cricket all those years ago. But we've seen the restraint that he, like, he's desperately trying not to go there, not to tap into that evil. But Carmine just keeps pushing and pushing. And then now we have Finn's manipulation with the drug storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, just how far can Michael be pushed before he taps into his old, you know,
I think he
wheelhouse.
Already does. I mean, the thing that they've allowed me to keep, and that's what's wonderful. I mean, I think Michael is one of the best written characters on the show, and that the layers keep coming on. You've never had him dispose of any of his history. The part and parcel of the trouble with Fenmore from the very beginning was Michael terrified that his son might go down the path he went, that his brother went down, and that Michael's inability to protect Kevin or his son from any of this, because he's a control freak when it comes to family now, because he ditched his brother when his brother needed him most when he was a kid and let him be beaten and abandoned him with terrible Tom. And that references his whole life, and it's still there. The writers have never forgotten it. It affects his relationship with Kevin, and it affects this need to protect the people he loves because he didn't do it. And there's a horrible guilt associated any time something happens damaging. So that's his hyperprotectiveness of Max, of a Fenmore, and his determination to make sure Fenmore doesn't go down that road. So you see that going, you see the fear of his dark side from the very beginning projected onto Max, and then you see him with his dealings with Carmine, right, pushing and pushing and pushing. So there's, and the whole great thing, mental illness is like alcoholism. You do not get better. You are recovering all the time. You develop a process to deal with your problem. And so they've never let the darkness out of Michael. And I, as an actor, try to hold on to it as much as possible because, you know, it makes him a human character. We all do the right things for the wrong reasons and the wrong things for the right reasons. And you, and it's wonderful to have been the bad guy, quote unquote, in the beginning, because the audience can always wait for you to throw that card again, and it keeps the drama going.
And you,
so,
and
yeah,
Michelle,
it's wonderful
that
Carmine pushes that.
Yeah, you and your and Michelle Stafford, who is one of your best friends in real life, you guys both have that in common, that you came on the show as classic Bill Bell villains, and you made us love you. You made us love you, and they had to come up with a way to keep you around, because it used to be the running joke with Y&R that Bill Bell didn't suffer his villains long, whereas on Days, you know, they create the Stefanos and the people
right.
like that. But with Bill Bell, there always had to be a retribution. There had to be a prison sentence. There had to be the villain got murdered. And then basically, I guess it started with Kimberlyn Brown. He kind of started creating these villains that, you know, became so popular that he was like, well, wait, I can't
right.
kill off Sheila or Phyllis or Michael. I have to figure out a way to redeem them. And, you know, so I have to ask you, what is it? What are your emotions with Michelle leaving the show?
Oh, I'm devastated that she's leaving the show, but I also know as a friend that I know as an actor and an artist that she is. She needs to. She's compelled to do more and to be better and to look for other avenues for her talent. I would not be the actor I am if I'm at all good. It's because they let me go for 3 years. Speaking of Bill Bell trying to preserve characters, I mean, and also Michael Maloney actually told me this, because after he researched the book, you know, The Young and the Restless Life of William Bell, I was the only one he called back. He actually called back from letting go as the character that way. He had said he'd phone me, and he did 3 years later. Well, I turned him down once because I was in a play, but he did that. But I mean, Michelle, I mean, I wouldn't be the actor I was if I wasn't gone for 3 years. And I did theater with Julie Harris. I was on the stage with Julie Harris, most nominated for Tony Awards in the world, Julie Harris. East of Eden, Julie Harris. He offered, after extensive class and stuff, he offered me top billing with her You don't get that. And when Julie Harris tells you you're good, or Charles Riley tells you you're good, or Eileen Brennan, that's something you can put in your quiver. You come back to the show, and you know it, whether she comes back or not, you know, an actor needs to search for ways to stretch, and it's wonderful. And it's her life has, you know, she's seen her sister has been ill and recovered with breast cancer. She's going to come up next weekend with me to the HT for the, you know, Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. Janine's going to talk. That's Michelle's sister. But she said in her farewell speech on stage, you see something like that happen to someone you love. And then she had a baby. She has a daughter. She wants to be the example of the mother who went off to pursue her dream and not who played it safe. And I thought, when she told me those, as selfish as I was being, and I wanted her to stay, and I miss her terribly, I was like, you go. Oh, my gosh, yes. Because she has a gift. She has an amazing, amazing gift.
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason she can't do so many things with that. And why not? It's an adventure, and it should be. So, I mean, I want her with me on the show, and I want her for the show because I think it's a great loss between her and Jeannie. It's not the same show. But I certainly understand.
Well, we can't really close out this portion of the discussion about the Fenmore-Baldwin family feud and fallout without really delving into Max Eric. Oh, my gosh. Casting younger actors on soaps can be so hit or miss. Do you think that you and Tracy totally lucked out having such a talent playing your son?
I've been so lucky with my family. You remember, I used to talk early on in Michael's life on the show as being alone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Then out of nowhere, they brought Kevin. He was in a separate storyline. And the rumor was Jack Smith's daughter, Asia, was looking at the TV once. They looked very much like brothers. And that put a little burr in Jack Smith's muscle. And they dropped in this amazing talent, Greg Rickard, to be my brother, walks into the office. Hey, brother. And then the Judith Chapman. And then, Tracy as my wife. I mean, there's gold when we're in the room. And then you bring in Max Eric. The little babies were even great. Casting did a beautiful job. And Judy brought in Max. And I will remember reading. I read with Max. I read with the new Fenmores.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. They were all ages and stuff like that. They wanted to go a little older and play young, which is how I started. I was 24 playing 17.
As
the World Turns, right. Kirk McCall. And so there were a bunch of ages in there. And I remember it was a fight between Max, between Fenmore and Michael. And the other ones fought me like men. And they weren't, they were older people, but they looked like children. But they fought me. Max fought me like a son.
Right.
And
got it.
He had this great look. It was different. They didn't go for big stud. They didn't go for anything typical. They went for a little darker, more diminutive, someone who was obviously the overprotected son, a smart son of smart parents and overprotected parents after all the Sheila mess.
Mm-hmm.
This was so logically Lauren and Michael's son. And they tell me that me and Kevin and Max look alike, and not until I saw a picture of the three of us standing there, I went, this could certainly be family, and he certainly looks like Michael's and Lauren's son.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
But between Kevin, me, and Mike, if you see a picture, there's a picture I have on the internet of the three of us during the photo shoot. And I'm like, yeah, that looks like a father, an uncle, and the nephew's son.
Mm-hmm.
He's wonderful. And talk about dropped into the deep end, doing these scenes where we're fighting. And I mean, he had to go from 0 to 60, and he did. And he's charming, and he got a band, he's multi-talented. But again, he goes there, and he's there to work. He knows his lines. I mean, it's an intimidating thing to walk in sometimes to these kind of shows. People have been on the show for 20-something years, and you're right into deep fights that are intimate, and you have to be someone who's had a 17, 18-year relationship with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And especially of age to something, so you have to make up a bit. He did it, and it works. I think people adore him. I can't say enough about him.
Oh yeah, he was my pick. You know, he was my top pick for, which I was wrong, but yep. for outstanding younger actor this past time. I really felt.
Oh, I pushed him to get. I said, jump into that. I'm on the board for Addis, and I was making everyone nominate them. You know, it's like get in there. A lot of the new people never know how that whole mm-hmm. process works. But I thought him and also Hunter.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful work.
Yeah,
Julian is fun, and he did, and, you know, and he was so excited. But yeah, of course, and if not this year, next year. I mean, he's got the work this year also.
Well, he has a lot of awards in his future.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. He's very gifted.
Both Michael and Lauren were villains who found redemption. Can we expect the same for your nemesis, Carmine, or should he start wearing bulletproof bartender's uniform?
Well, you know how they are with bad guys. I think there's always hope. You never know until you're decapitated in some accident or you're in a dumpster like poor Michael Corbett. They had to carve killer onto his forehead before I did.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, I mean, you never know. And I adore Marco. He's... You know, Marco and I've had these scenes where you're violent with each other, and I got to tell you, if it's like I have to say the same with Christine, when we had to play the rape scenes, mm-hmm. if there were any discomfort in their eyes, I am not a good enough actor to get past that, mm-hmm. and I would have had to stop. I would not have been, but they go in there full bore. You know, Trace, Christine, Laura Lee. I was stunned because, you know, violence and women, and it's all this, it's very icky for the man, for me to play that. Mm-hmm. And she was so gung-ho and at my back and comfortable that I was able to play. Mm-hmm. And Marco is the same thing. There's no ego in these fights. It's like a dance routine. And I mean, we have to be in each other's faces. You have to be, you know, because it's a very, you know, best enemies is a very intimate situation also.
Mm-hmm.
And he's safe, and you know, and it gives me the freedom to do what I need to do or want to do as an actor. So I mean, and he's just a sweet guy. He's just, I mean, he is lovely to be around, and he's so enjoys being there. Smart, but like I said, I was just with him this morning, and his family came to watch him tweet. And again, well, you never know. You never know with your bad guys, because if you find something in your character that the people love to watch. The smart writer and the smart showrunners will, you know, will see it. The audience will tell them. The audience will let them know. And he's a sexy beast, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, hey.
That's, yeah.
He can't deny it. Lauren couldn't cheat on Michael, who is a sexy beast, with someone who isn't a sexy beast. Come on.
I know, right? They don't bring in some troll, because I'll feel bad.
And I mean, look, and even back in her history, I mean, come on. Remember the Paul naked picture to the nudie magazine. So she's got good taste in this.
Lauren's not just going to go for anyone, exactly.
Right. Now, you mentioned that you're going to be doing Kate Linder's Tea in Vancouver. That's July 20th.
The 20th, yep. It's
that's
next
my
weekend.
Birthday. See, y'all are having a tea for me.
There
again.
You go. Well, happy birthday early. And it's for a good cause. It's a good birth. I mean, it's wonderful. And then Michelle and her sister Janine.
Cancer Foundation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Michelle's bringing Janine up, her sister, to talk about having survived.
And I've had two
in total
aunts.
Remission.
Yeah.
What's that?
I've had two aunts on my mother's side who have had double mastectomies. An aunt by marriage on my mom's side also had a mastectomy recently. And then my dad's twin sister had a mastectomy recently. So definitely something that hits close to home, and so glad to be, you know, sort of helping you guys get the word out on this. And,
oh, thank you.
You know,
one of the main reasons I wanted to talk with you guys is we have the we do KHT every year, and the Canadian breast cancer people are amazing. And like I said, Janine's is going to go up there and open up. I mean, this was just recent, where she went into remission.
That's amazing. Well, if you got any video footage or anything, you know, send it to us. We'll be happy to post it. And I know this Thursday you're also doing Dining Out for Life in New Orleans with the No AIDS Task Force. Tell us about that.
Well, that's a way to go to dinner. That's a way to fight AIDS. It's all taught that only in New Orleans. But it's actually a national organization. You know, we have a Dine Out LA. where you go out to dinner at participating restaurants, and a portion of your bill goes to the charity of their choice. And it's usually, it's, you know, it's NOAIDS LA. And we did, the AIDS Task Force. But in New Orleans on the 18th, which is this Thursday, which, and New Orleans is an amazing place to eat. You go to any participating restaurant. There's a little over 100 of them. They're on the website. I've been Twittering and posting. And a portion of the bill goes to the New AIDS Task Force, which helps support men, women, and families who are living with AIDS. And it's an amazing charity. My brother passed away of AIDS in New Orleans before they had all these amazing organizations or the medications that they use now to save lives. Mm-hmm. And still in New Orleans, people helped even way back in the day, and he was only 25. But now people are living with it, and they need help, and they need education, and it's a wonderful way to help out. I was encouraged. The theme is basically the best thing to make for dinner in New Orleans Thursday is a reservation.
Oh, nice.
So that's what we're encouraging everybody to do. And I was asked to co-chair Dining Out for Life, which is what the charity is called, by Poppy Tooker, who's this amazing celebrity chef from New Orleans. He hosts Louisiana Eats on the public station in New Orleans.
Have some crawfish etouffee for me, and then stop by and get some beignets.
Exactly. That's how we roll. That's not even for charity. That was just walking out in the afternoon. But it is a wonderful way to help out. And I participated. You know, I took a gang, and we went out to dinner with Jessica Collins. A bunch of us went downtown for dinner for Dine Out LA, which is our local one. So, I mean, it's just a wonderful way to do it and for everyone to participate. So we have the tea up in Vancouver, which is coming up this weekend, and we have Dining Out for Life in New Orleans this Thursday.
I know. I want to see. I want to go on the road with you. I want to be your roadie. I'm like, can I go cover?
We have a ball. I got to tell you. We laugh through all our charities. But it is the best thing that any kind of celebrity gets you is this ability to show up and make a difference somehow.
Yes.
People will come and listen to you, and you can help bring attention to these amazing causes. And the people on the show, people in daytime in general, we do a lot of them. You'll see them traveling everywhere. And in New Orleans since Katrina, I mean, I can't tell you how much the Days of Our Lives people have done, and the All My Children people did with their Mardi Gras ball. People have been very supportive everywhere. Mm. So, I mean, but particularly I'm proud to be a member of the daytime community that really they give back. I mean, these people have families and massive obligations like we all do, and yet they take their time to travel. And I love being a part of that. You know the people we're talking about.
Oh yeah, a lot of the days buddies, Eric Martstoff and a few others, were here in Atlanta a month or so back for Autism Speaks, and
right.
You know, had a great time with them. You know, great time, great cause.
Ari Zucker and those and
yeah,
Eric,
and you know, and
amazing.
They, you know, all weekend long, and they're there, they, you know, engage with the fans, they, you know, it's a really fun social event, and all for something, you know, positive and wonderful. I do love that aspect of this community.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just, like I said, such a bully pulpit, and I love that the people use it.
YNR and the daytime community as a whole were dealt a huge blow when we lost Jeannie Cooper. How is the cast and crew coping?
Oh, it's a tough. That was a tough one. It was tough for me personally. It was tough for everybody personally. Jeannie was one of those big personalities who kind of insinuated herself into everybody's life. She was everyone's mom. Even, you know, while we were shooting the memorial show, I was standing. We all watched on the monitors as each person took their turn, and you know, one of the crewmen was just saying he was, you know, the older guy, and he was just saying she was all of our mothers, and it's true. And I mean, I get a little, you know, move just talking about it. It's just one of those things. She took time. She cared. She was in her 80s, and she was still curious, which I think somebody complimented me that way once. I said, what an odd compliment. But you know what? It's kind of what you do in life. You can stay curious about life and lean in, basically. And she did with gusto. And It's hard. I think we're dealing with, the writers have to scramble to deal with, Miss Chancellor and how they're going to deal with Jeannie's death for her character. But again, we're up in Vancouver. It was such a demand for some kind of addressing of the issue that a lot of it, is going to be brought a little video of memorial to Jeannie, and that's what the Q&A I'm sure will be a lot about. And people in Vancouver will be Jess Walton and Trisha Cass and Michelle Stafford. They all have, especially Jess, have these amazing tales of Jeannie. It's an ongoing process. It's like it's losing a member of your family, and you just the one thing, Doug Davidson, who's known her forever, and Greg Rickard, who's very close, they both sat me down because I initially wasn't comfortable doing the show. I didn't know if I was ready to do a memorial show. It was a little personal. He reminded me that she would love it. I go, you know what? She would. She'd want me to leap into the grave like a Baptist funeral and wail. The bigger and the more dramatic, the better. And she would
have you been to one of my family's funerals?
I'm telling you, I'm from Louisiana. You can't be just... Sing it, brother man.
Oh, Christian,
two
of my aunts on my dad's side, look, I'll get kicked out of the family for telling this story, but when my uncle passed, we thought they were going to knock his casket to the ground because, and you know how it is in the South, somebody dies on a Saturday, you don't bury them to the next Saturday. So they've had all week to get themselves together, but then they get up there at the funeral and just have a full-on fit. My brother, and started rocking the casket back and forth, and we just knew that it was about to go sailing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's kind of performance art in the South. Got to get it down.
It
right.
is. You got to get your you got to get your hat ready.
I think that week is prep. I think that's prep for wardrobe. Get it all worked up. Know exactly how you're going to throw yourself on the coffin so you don't hurt anybody. You got to be slow enough so relatives can pull you off in time.
You know how they
do a little circle around you. If you're feeling the spirit, they make the little circle around you in church to protect you.
Yes, I love talking to a fellow Southerner. It's
exactly.
Just like home.
This is business work. Mourning is not for amateurs, my friend.
It's not for the faint of heart, I tell you.
They're expecting a show, and you better give it.
Yes.
They will take it out in the streets in New Orleans with a casket and a chariot, horses with plumes. We'll do it with a band if we have to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to ask this after that and follow it up, but in light of Jeannie Cooper's passing, the show has said that they're going to deal with Kay's on-screen demise, and that it's going to spawn a lot of different storylines. Any chance we're going to see Michael be involved legally in any of the resulting storylines?
You know what? I have not heard, which is not unusual, but that has not been let out as far as the repercussions. So it'll be interesting. Yeah. I would love to, I've always, aside from me going up there and pitching, which is the only thing I do, a runoff of our show called Just Me, the Michael Baldwin story. Other than pitching that, I have really no interest in any other storyline until they tell me.
Gotcha.
And they don't want to hear from me anyway. So, yeah.
But
that would be fantastic. I mean, again, one of the best things about Michael's character also is he's portable. I get to march through people's storylines as the lawyer, so I mean, I'm all for it. I love working with the other castmates.
At some point, there has to be a conflict of interest.
You would think, right?
You would think, right?
I mean,
because I do
Victor's
operate.
Victor's attorney, Jack's attorney, Catherine's attorney, everybody's attorney at some point or other.
Well, there's tons of attorneys now. Michael has some. He has some help filing his.
Which attorney. I kind of like. I kind of like that. You have Angel and you have Avery. I'm not alone in the world.
Right. You've representing got someone to litigate against.
Who knows what my expertise was?
You know how it is with the soap town. It's just like with the doctor. The doctor is the obstetrician. She's the pediatrician. She's the heart specialist. She's the pet psychic. And then, Michael specialized in corporate law. you know, divorce court,
we'll do it,
criminal
whatever
law.
pay, exactly. Well, whoever pays me the most, I will do
well,
it. I'm a good, good
giving,
lawyer.
Your family was giving you the most billable hours there for a couple
I know,
years.
Right? And I had to probably do it for free. That really would kick me off.
Speaking of which, we need Gloria to have some hijinks again so he can save her.
I loved seeing Gloria was on today's show because I know because we were tweeting during it. I just adore Judith Chapman. I think she's sorely missed from the show, and I would love for her to have something great to do. And her and Ted Shackelford are amazing, and I think they add so much to the show, and we don't have any characters like Gloria.
You know, I used to not be a fan of Gloria's antics back in the day, like during the whole Mr. Abbott storyline where she, you know, but now I said it today, and people who know who followed me forever, they saw me tweeting about how refreshing it was to see Gloria, and I really meant that. It was like, you know, because there's a lot of newer faces on the show, so it was really cool to see, you know, a good scene with Gloria giving Lauren her dressing down, so I have
right?
was missed.
No, well, I loved it. I love
seeing
it.
We could talk to you all day, you know that. And
people have begged me not to do that, but yeah, we could.
Yeah, this time we won't do a Tennessee Williams reenactment like the last time.
But, I know, right? We all getting dark and southern.
So we will post.
We did marry your cousin, but we'll talk.
Yeah, you know, it's all right as long as it's preserving the family fortune.
Exactly. As long as they don't break up the big house.
Right, you know, yeah, in the South, all this stuff with Summer and Kyle, though.
we wouldn't even blink. That whole family tree was a straight line as it is.
Oh, Lord. So we're going to
Ryan?
Post inside to promote this Thursday's Dining Out for Life in New Orleans and your tea coming up with Kate Linder on my birthday, July 20th. So, Christian, happy travels, and just keep entertaining us on The Young and the Restless.
Oh, thank you so much, and thanks for having me. I so appreciate it.